So in the previous session, we ended off where Eve and that, well, at this stage, she's not called Eve. The man and the woman partook of this knowledge of the good and evil. She partook, gave to her husband who was with her. And suddenly, in partaking of this fruit, everything becomes more sensual. There's an emphasis on desire and the desire for knowledge. Now, the eyes of them both were, this is chapter 3, verse 7, the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. Remember the last verse of chapter 2 said that the man and the woman were both naked, but unashamed. They were indifferent to their differences. But now, after partaking of this knowledge of good and evil, their eyes are opened. They are naked, but now they know it. A new level of consciousness has entered, and the subconscious has been opened up and is explored. And so it is in this place where they now are aware of their nakedness, they're aware of their shame, that something quite amazing happens, and I want to read that for you. This is in chapter 3 from verse 8 to 10. Let me read that. And now they heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and the man and the wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God among the trees of the garden. But the Lord called out to man and said, "Where are you?" And said, "I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid, and because I was naked, and I hid myself." Something amazing is happening in this text. You see, it is only once they partook of this knowledge of good and evil that the text takes on a new sensual character, and emphasis is placed on the desirability of the fruit, of what they see, of what they contemplate, of what they taste, of what they partake of. There's a new emphasis on the sensual aspect of our existence. But what is powerfully happening here is that for the first time, God enters this drama in an obvious sensual way. They heard the sound of God. He was walking in the garden in the cool of the day. Even the way in which God is now described is in a very sensual aspect that wasn't present there before. Desire has given priority to sensory knowledge, and the text itself has now taken on this perspective. Now, this is enormously significant because it seems like even the text is now written from the perspective of one of these earthlings who has partaken of the knowledge of good and evil. Sandor Goodhart, in his book, The Prophetic Law, another book that I will reference in the article, beautifully explores this aspect of the text. Because if what we read further now is indeed written from the perspective of one of these earthlings, it opens up new avenues of meaning that is quite astounding. Because it means that what we continue to read now is written from the perspective of an earthling who has suddenly he has exchanged relationship for a new self-knowledge and self-awareness. Desire has been twisted. And there's guilt, there's shame, there's fear, there's this newfound ability to hide myself. Something has happened that they are not happy with. And even the way in which they now imagine God is the way in which many children imagine their parents as they develop through their childhood. Young children, you know, experience their parents as the agencies who both provide yet limit, as people who both give yet take away, people who sometimes say yes, sometimes no, people who, as in this story, provide clothing yet punish. But that is all written from the perspective of a humanity within their early, naive, childish development. Let me read you what Sandor Goodhart said. Is the image of God that the text projects for us an image based upon the distorted perspective of the characters within it? Characters who have experienced something they are unhappy about, and that colors their perspective of things. I want to read you another one of his things in here. He says, what if it turns out, in other words, that there was no expulsion? That we weren't victims? Or that if we were victims, we were victims only of ourselves, and that we should move from themes of scapegoating, persecution, victimage, to themes of responsibility and ownership of our own role in violence against one another. Now, you see, when the story develops and God and man eventually meet one another, from this perspective, what happens is man, the male Adam, blames God. God punishes man. The woman blames the snake. The whole theme of scapegoating develops. Are we now able to recognize Adam and Eve as people like ourselves? Embarrassingly, yes. It seems like they have become fully human. Humans who would project their own feelings of inadequacy, their own fears, their own misunderstandings onto God and onto others. I want to end off with this thought, and this this goes back to what to one of the authors I mentioned before, the book The Murmuring Deep. After God pronounces what the consequences are of their actions and etc., only after that does Adam name his wife Eve, and he says, because you are the mother of all life. Now, logically, she's only the mother of human life. But for Adam, the complexity of relationship has opened up a whole new dimension of life. And that's why you can say, you are the mother of all life. Now, let me read from Aviva's book, The Murmuring Deep, where she so beautifully describes the situation. In naming her in this way, he marks a passionate and ambiguous knowledge that he can express only with the baffled intensity of one who has stepped into a transformed world. Eve has brought Adam into a world of uncertainty and agitation, of process and risk, beyond the grasp of his intellect. His sovereign relationship to this world and its meaning yields to her enigmatic vitality, Remember, Adam had such power and control over his language in naming everything. But Eve disrupted that mastery of language. The essence of life that flows to him from her. She has proven irreducibly other, an otherness he experiences as intense life. The way he now uses language to name her contains the irony, the doubleness, the revelation of poetry. Eve has seduced Adam. The revelation of poetry. She takes him beyond himself and he strains to communicate this transcendence. In a word, Eve has seduced Adam. One effect of her seduction is to move the other to speechlessness and then into a new, dazzled language. Wow. So, maybe the story of Genesis is the story of every human being. It's the story of how consciousness unfolds. Maybe it is the story of how human consciousness is birthed out of a naive, childlike innocence into the reality of the world that contains both good and evil. And it's interesting, in chapter 3, verse 23, later on, God actually speaks and says, now man has become like one of us, knowing both good and evil. And so it seems almost like the serpent spoke the truth instead of having lied, because he promised that, and then it seems like God confirmed it later on. So there's very interesting complexities in this text. But what we can see developing here is a story that shows us how every person comes into this world, develops through places where we are unconscious of self, early childhood development, into the place where we are aware of the richness and the complexity of human life. And it is both the extremes of love and disappointment, of suffering, pain, but the joy of relationship that is the reality of the world we find ourselves in. Now, all through this chapter, the fall was not mentioned once. Not even sin is mentioned. We'll have to wait for the next chapter when sin is mentioned for the first time, and it is mentioned in the context of the act of violence. But that is for another session. Thank you. Bye.